Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, and I am positively breaking them down. We got the Maryland Lottery scratch-offs from the Ravens. Got a lucky batch. Tammy won $2. We're out here at State Fair. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I did have crab and shrimp in my omelet this morning, so I have given my crab, but I have lunch mates here today. And if you are listening before the Ravens game on Thursday night, Luke and I will have full coverage. If this appears to you after the Ravens win or lose in Miami, or Lamar plays or doesn't play in Miami on Thursday night, I invited Alan originally to come out and be my guest at State Fair, thinking like we could talk about who the manager's going to be, and we'll be in the middle of the World Series. It'll be like game four, but we really need to talk about the World Series other than it's the World Series. But what's really important would be who the Orioles are going to hire to manage and what players they're going to get. And I thought, well, that's good. And then I thought, well, I wonder if Luke could come out if I don't do this too early in the morning. And then I realized, like, well, John Harbaugh runs the Ravens, and there's only 3 days, and they do have to get on a plane on Wednesday, and they're not really going to practice anyway, and they're going to lie about whether Lamar practiced or not anyway. I wonder if I could get Luke out here. And I punted this thing a whole hour to give Alan an extra hour to sleep, because Alan never sleeps, to give Luke an extra hour of sleep, because if you listen to the station, you know he never sleeps. And I fell asleep in the third inning of Game 3 of the World Series on
Monday. So you didn't make it far at all.
It gets better. It gets way better. My wife and I are on the love sack with the cat, and we got Commanders and Chiefs and the baseball game. And it was 2-0, and then my dude hit the big home run, and it was 4-2. And I looked at her, and she looked at me. It was like the fourth inning, and I'm like, it's not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. And I don't want to.
Little did you know.
And I don't want to fall asleep in this chair. Well, I'm way more concerned about Jamaica. And if anybody knows me, knows how much I love Jamaica, how much time I've spent in Jamaica, how many people I know and I love in Jamaica who are, I can't even talk about it. So it really bothered me. Jamaica was bothering me on Monday more than anything. And I went to bed. And I woke up because I'm 57 years old and I'm having my colonoscopy later this month at GBMC. And I pee a lot because I'm 57 and I'm a dude. And I went to yoga yesterday and I hydrated. And I woke up, and this is God's honest truth, I woke up at 2:20 a.m. And like every good American, I reached for my phone. And I reached for my glasses. And I fed the cat and I went to pee. And when I came back, I just checked my phone to set my alarm so I would wake up. And I thought, I wonder who won the game.
Right.
And I looked down, literally, peeing in the dark on my phone, and it said 5-5 in the 18th inning.
Yeah.
And I looked down, and it was 2:28 a.m. or whatever. And I'm like, you
refresh, refresh.
Yeah, I'm trying to hit the phone. I'm like, that can't be right. And I'm looking at the time, and I'm like, well, it might be the 18th inning. So I walk back into my office, put the television on, and it was the 18th inning. And then I heard out of the bedroom, I heard, my wife was coughing. I went, I'm like, hey, you awake? Well, I am now. I said, the baseball game's in the 18th inning. It's 5-5. Do you want to get up? She got up. We watched the end of the game.
That's great.
Freddie Freeman hit the home run. She went back to bed at 3:50.
You were refreshed, unlike the rest of us.
I brewed a pot of coffee. I've been awake ever since. How you boys doing?
Wow.
I was in D.C. when the game started. And I was with my girlfriend. And at 9, I was following the game. And at 9 o'clock, I was helping her run an errand. And she said, what are you looking at? I said, I'm looking at the World Series game. She says, oh, you gave up a World Series game to spend time with me? It's like, I've given up a lot of time to watch baseball to be with you. And she's like, I'd be impressed if it were the Orioles. I'm like, if it were the Orioles, I would not be here.
Right.
But I was like, you know, I'm driving home, and I'm like, well, I'll see the last few innings of the game, whatever. And I'll be completely honest. When I want the Dodgers to win, and when Kirk hit the home run, I turned the game off because I literally turned on the radio and he hit the home run a minute later. It's like, I need to turn this off right now because this happens to me a lot. Like, I bring bad vibes.
Sports superstition.
So, but I'm like, when I get home, I'll watch the game. And for a split second, I actually thought, because, you know, I'm a huge cinephile, there's a movie I wanted to see. I'm like, I could catch this, like, this last bit of this, this, the late show of this movie. It's like, no, I really want to go and watch the game. So I get home, and it's like the seventh or eighth inning. And the game keeps going. And keeps going, and I'm like, this is unbelievable. And I looked at my phone, and I was like...
Well, the 12th inning thing was crazy, too, with the bases loaded and Kershaw, the whole deal, right?
What wasn't crazy about that game? I literally could have gone to the movie, gotten home, and still seen the last, like, three
or
four
I slept
the
whole night's sleep. I got 6 hours of sleep, woke up, and, you know, and caught the end of the game.
I'm running on about 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Luke, you look dead. Like, your eyes, I mean, like, I'm looking at
thanks.
You. I've never seen you look more tired, and I've done all-night radio with you. You look tired. Are you tired?
It's probably more from the previous night, to be honest.
Okay.
See, because Ravens home game, it was a 1 o'clock game. I'm not saying it was, you know, prime time, and I literally got no sleep, but was up late watching the Pittsburgh Sunday night game, was doing Ravens stuff. Tried to do a Ravens.
We really do Monday morning radio. Monday morning.
Oh yeah, we started our real time 5:45. Yeah. I tried to rewatch a couple parts of the game. I tried to, you know, and then I did all my, you know, my 12 thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. I did that much earlier in the day Monday than I normally do. I rewatched the game. The Ravens were back at it on Monday with a walkthrough and Harbaugh talking and open locker room. So it got to be about 9:15 last night. I saw the Kirk home run, and I think I fell asleep 20 minutes after that.
Right. About 9:30.
I woke back up, and I was on the couch at that point. I woke back up. I definitely saw Kershaw come in and strand the bases loaded, and I was so happy for that because despite his postseason failures over the year, I've been a big Clayton Kershaw guy, and I knew quite possibly that could be the last time we see him on the mound. So that was cool. And then I think I fell back asleep in the 14th. I had gone to bed at that point and then woke up as Freddie Freeman was circling the bases. So I fell asleep multiple times and woke up. And
did anybody see all 604 pitches? I mean, like.
It's funny, but before we started this conversation, Alan and I were sitting over there, and he asked me, so was that a great baseball game or just a really crazy example of futility? And I said, probably a combination of both, just with the modern game, but some incredible relief stints in that game. I mean, some
incredible plays. The Guerrero.
Oh, no question. No question. Yeah. So, I remember the Dodgers-Red Sox game that went 18 innings in, 2018? That one I watched the entire thing. Speaks to the fact I was 7 years younger and had more energy. Incredible.
Marathon things I've ever done like that. I mean, just all-nighters. I mean, I remember that Braves game that played all night. I did at 4 in the morning. The Braves were playing the Mets or something 25, 30 years ago. I came in and I watched the baseball game at 4:20 in the morning or whatever, you know.
Sure.
Like, I have done that. Not even West Coast games, but I must say that when I looked down on the phone and saw 5-5, 18th inning on my phone at 2:30 in the morning, and I'm just up, like, in the middle of the night, I'm like, this will never happen again. So I'm glad we led with that, but the real lead story was I invited Alan out here to State Fair for the Crab Cake Tour today, thinking like you and I would do a little breezy baseball, managerial, how the offseason would look, and then I wanted to invite Luke, and because of scheduling and the game this week, Luke, we made it happen, and we lead with this World Series thing, but like in the last 48 hours, the Orioles have hired a manager, so like I have a different conversation with both of you, and I'm blessed to have you together because I figure I'm going to get out of the way and let you guys argue because you did 20 minutes of radio over there before we started.
We really did.
So I don't really – that pisses me off. If Mueller were here, I would have broken you two up.
Well, what do you want us to do, stare at each other?
Yes. Talk about something else.
By the way, that was the other thing that why I got no sleep on Sunday night. The Orioles, you know, news broke that they were hiring Craig Abernathy, so like, hey, you know, something else to add.
Well, I'll start with you. Luke, you and I have done 45 minutes on this bench coach from Cleveland who's got the Boston accent. I mean, I feel like I've learned a lot about him in 36, 48 hours, whatever it is. He'll do his own tour here. Alan, I'll bring it to you. And somebody said today, who are you having by? I'm like, well, I'm having my baseball reporter the first 15 years of my career and the baseball reporter the last two decades. So, like, there's a lot of baseball going on here in institutional knowledge. I can't imagine a conversation that the audience, and not to patronize the audience or you guys, but sort of like, I am interested. We haven't hired a manager here since they sucked the last time. There's a new ownership. there's real questions about Mike Elias, I think, sure. and about the operation in general, that he's the one picking the groceries. But this is all real and it's all here, and they're going to move forward and probably spend a lot of money in the next 90 days, I think, right?
They better.
They need to. Look, I'm not going to lie. I only thing I know about Craig Albernaz is everything I've learned in the last 36, 48 hours about him. His pedigree makes sense, and he, as Luke and I were talking about over there, I mean, Luke said it, and I agree with him, that, you know, coming from Tampa, cutting your teeth as the bench coach in Cleveland, that those are good places, because these are places that are not going to, that don't spend on the highest payrolls, and they play the base, they play the game well, they play the game right.
Well, more instructional organizations, right?
They overachieve.
Absolutely. And you know, if you're anybody that thinks the Orioles should sign Shohei Ohtani or should have signed Shohei Ohtani, I mean, that's just ridiculous. But they shouldn't be the least payroll as well. So if you are realistic enough to think, okay, they should be somewhere in probably the lower middle, they're going to have to do some things differently than New York or Los Angeles. Or
so we're now lower middles where we think we are. That's a far cry from where we were 30 years ago with the Blue. You know, with the first time the Blue Jays were good, and we were aspiring to be that kind of franchise. And again, I'm going to hear Katie Griggs in a couple hours. She doesn't know it yet. Hi, Katie. And I'll get to hear what they have to say. But is that what they're going to say?
I don't know.
We're a lower middle payroll team.
I don't know. I don't know if that's where they should be. I don't know if that's where they'll admit that they are. But I'm pretty sure that's where they think they are. That's where they aspire to be internally in terms of the way they handle their business.
Well, you learn about how they're going to shop for their groceries, right?
Yeah, and it fluctuates. I mean, I've used the St. Louis Cardinals as a rough example the last few years. When you look at where the Cardinals have been, and look, they've been as successful as just about anyone over the last 25 years. Farm system, payrolls have rarely been in like the top five or the top eight, but they've been as high as, top 10, top 9, and some years they fall back and they're 15th, right? I mean, I don't think that's terribly far off from what Alan's saying in terms of what they could aspire to be if they are run very well. And
right.
Some of that is also when you are, as I've said for years, this isn't about spending money just for the sake of spending money. They spent money on Tyler O'Neill last winter. That was abysmal how that turned out.
I always go
one.
To the other side and see how they're going to generate the money to pay for the money.
And that's right.
and that's about how piss poor they're run.
And that's part of it, too.
And literally, that's where Katie Griggs comes in. That's where losing 500,000 fans last year. That's where having no caravans or off-season things that people want to be involved in. Or hiring a manager nobody's heard of and not even bringing him into town and doing it sort of. Didn't they sort of break the baseball rules this week by like announcing
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that during
like that's,
but you had
that's
to
bad
move.
Form.
But they had to move because they are one of 9 teams trying to find a manager.
And some other teams have announced as well. Yeah. I think they would say that's why we're having the press conference next Tuesday as opposed to this past this past Tuesday. So
look, I don't think that this is a club that I've never believed they needed to spend the most money. They need to handle their business well.
Sure.
And the reality of the situation right now is that if you wanted them to get a veteran manager, who did you want that to be? Did you want that to be Bob Melvin or Schulte or any of these guys? Maybe Skip Schumacher was a guy that you would have been interested in, but he was never coming here because he was in waiting in Texas.
Yeah.
Other than that, everybody else was a retread guy who, has experience but hasn't really done anything, one here and there. So if you're selling to me, this is the next big guy, I'll accept that. It also plays into this narrative about Elias that he doesn't necessarily want anyone to challenge his authority. Whether that's true or not, only the shadow knows. But ultimately, they got a guy who people in this industry seem to believe in, and I think is likely to be able to relate to young players who are trying to make their name in the game, many of whom who have a chance to be superstars, but almost all of them took a significant step back in 2025 on the baseball field and need to figure some things out.
Yeah, when everybody in the organization took a step back this year, and we can almost agree, and Luke, you're, I don't know who took a step forward. I mean, maybe Jackson Holliday, you'd say half a step.
But that wasn't a gigantic step. It was a step. Yeah. But
yeah. Yeah, I mean, so from an instructional standpoint,
Trevor Rogers took a step forward.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's the big one. Sure.
I don't know that you're looking to the manager for that as much as what kind of staff he would bring together, right, Luke?
Well, I mean, I think the manager is certainly a big part of that. I mean, I think
he needs to foster an environment where people feel can and feel like they can thrive.
And this is where, and just to piggyback on what Alan was talking about Albernaz and what I liked about it, and I was in a vacuum, yes, I would have loved them to have brought in this experienced manager, but I don't know who that was. I mean, yeah. I said it to you on the air a couple days ago. I would hope they, you know, if they found out that Joe Maddon was interested in managing again, I'd hope they'd at least make a phone call.
Yeah.
Same with Bruce Bochy.
They did not call Joe Maddon. I know that for a fact.
But I'm just saying what I...
I have inside information on that.
Sure, and that's fine.
I asked that question yesterday.
And that's fine. But to me, at least reach out to some individuals like that, not even so much because you expect them to come manage for you, but get some ideas. Like, go talk to other people. And, and the thing I like about this with Albernaz, it's not someone that has ties to Houston, right? If they had hired, and I'm just saying this off the top of my head, I don't even know who the individual is off the top of my head, but if they had hired the bullpen coach of the Astros back in 2017, then I'm starting to question, are you guys really being introspective and looking to change things and evolve and tweak and bring in fresh minds and fresh eyeballs on what you're doing? Or was it all about the injuries and things had run its course with Brandon Hyde and you think, well, everyone will get healthy and we'll be fine, right? And that's, I think, the last thing that anyone wants to hear when you're coming
off
of a
year. Well, I don't know if Elias could be introspective with a real media member or with the fans ever to say what he really thinks.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Where were the breakdowns? What went wrong? Why did you really fire Brandon Hyde?
Right.
Was it public sentiment or did you think he couldn't do it? You think he lost the room? He was your guy. You threw him under the bus and you hid for 3.5 days. So, Alan, I'm on the rampage of Elias would not have been my guy picking the groceries anymore based on what happened here this year and his role in it, you know, for me. But Elias, to me, is much like Harbaugh in the football organization. He's untouchable right now. He has clearly won over Rubenstein. He's won the war. He's the survivor in this. Elias is going to be running this organization for quite some time, I think.
Let's be clear about something, okay? And there was 2025 was a significant failure. We all know that.
No doubt.
I heard a host on another radio show yesterday say, there's been no success here. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Before 2025, they took a gigantic leap to win 83 games 3 years ago. And then 2 years ago, they won 101 games out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. And hadn't spent that much money at the time. And then last year, even completely collapsing in the second half of the season, they won 91 games.
Sure.
So, I mean, I understand that recency bias clouds perspective. But they won a lot of games for 3 years consistently. And you can't discount that. And Mike Elias was the architect of those things. Now, can I give you reasons why I might have let Mike Elias go? Sure. But to say that every aspect of the organization took a step back and you're to blame for that, and he was, but I'm going to discount everything that happened in your tenure before that, is feels irresponsible to me, feels short-sighted to me. And I think that one of the things that gets organizations, sports, what have you, in trouble is when people don't look at the full picture of something.
I don't know that David Rubenstein can grasp the whole picture of this. And certainly the Angelos family was in no position. No one's ever grasped all of this. We spend more time grasping all of this and talking about all of it from an institutional standpoint because I've been grasping it and speaking about it every day of my life for 35 years, which puts me way ahead of Katie Griggs, way ahead of David Rubenstein, who doesn't even like baseball. So the Elias thing to me keeping him there institutionally was the easiest thing in the world to do. And just like keeping DaCosta and Harbaugh, it makes Bisciotti's job easier. Because the minute that he throws Harbaugh and DaCosta out, he's now got to come in, unless he's going to let Sashi Brown pick the next football guy, and do it. Right?
Right.
So the same thing is true for the baseball side, is that Rubenstein wanted to be in front of this, have his own bobblehead, make commercials, be famous, all of that stuff, right? He doesn't really want to make a decision about anything baseball-oriented because he's not of any expertise to do that.
Well, I think when he came
in, somebody's going to have to hire the next Mike Elias. That's going to be the owner, and that's been part of the problem with Peter up until the point where McPhail came in and really knew what he was doing, literally.
I would even say, and look, I have no fond memories of the Angelos family and the Angelos regime. They hired Mike Elias, and to Alan's point, we can talk all we want about the last 18 months, and I'll even go back to the trade deadline in 23.
You got to credit John with that. I would agree.
But I would say they hired someone who knew what this organization needed in terms of analytics, in terms of building an academy in the Dominican, in terms of player development, in terms of
modernizing it.
Modernizing it and streamlining everything after years and years of single A doing different things from double A and then getting the triple A. So there was a lot that needed to be done there. But to Alan's point, and I've talked about this a lot with you, you and I have talked about this a lot the last few years, you do get to a point when you were rebuilding, building to something, you establish something that was very successful beginning second half of 2022 into 23 through the first half of 24, and now you hit whatever metaphor you want to use, a roadblock, however you want to categorize it. And this year, or it was a train wreck.
The skids.
Right. I mean, it was very bad this year. However, how are you going to adjust? Are you going to look at this and continue to do the same things and not be introspective and have, frankly, an arrogance to what you do and think, oh, okay, it was just injuries, it was just this, it was just that, this certain player didn't do this, this coach didn't do that? Or are you going to say, hey, we need to pivot here, we need to revisit things? It doesn't mean all is bad, to Alan's point, and I wholeheartedly agree with his sentiment, but you need to make some changes here, and you need to adjust, and you need to tweak what you're doing from the top on down, right? Even the minor leagues, there were success stories, but there were other guys who took steps back. I mean, their first-round pick from last year, which might just be he was woeful in Aberdeen, right? So,
and they knew he was going to strike out.
Right, right.
He
was a late first-round pick. Like, you know, he's not a top-five pick. But that's why I do like this hire from the standpoint of, you have brought someone in who doesn't have any apparent ties to Mike Elias. I mean, again, if I'm really missing something, then I plead ignorance on it, and haven't slept the last couple days. But
well, I remember when Flanagan went and got Lee Mazzilli, brought him in completely from the outside, or Mike Hargrove completely.
Sure.
And, you know, it was like oil and water, and just in a general sense. I don't know. You'd like to think that they did a lot of praying here, and Elias just fired a manager and just fired another manager, right? Fired his assistant in Manzolino, too, right? He's fired two managers. And that he would look at this and say, he needs to do things differently, too.
Sure.
Because if you're going to bring somebody in that's going to say black when you say white, east when you say west, you better be ready to handle that.
Yeah.
Because my vibe is that Hyde was much more of a lieutenant and really worked to Elias to the point where it cost him his job, too.
Fair enough.
You know, I mean.
And I would say this, in any sphere, you're not going to necessarily hire someone that's going to completely 100% be the opposite of what you are.
Right.
But you want someone that does have ideas. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall during their interview, or whether it was Zoom, however they did it, and said, what do you think about what we're doing here? What do you think about our players? What do you think about our process based on what you've gathered? Because I'm sure you've done your homework talking to people around the league.
What do you think's wrong with Rutschman?
What's wrong with us? Right?
Right. Well, hey, how about that?
No,
right?
Seriously.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
This guy's a longtime catcher. It is kind of funny, since you mentioned Rutschman and I just brought up him being a catcher. There are elements to his background that remind you of Brandon Hyde. I mean, quite frankly. So,
Bruce Bochy and a whole bunch of other
But I would
guys,
also
right?
say, hey, Brandon Hyde, until this thing wasn't working anymore,
was the right guy.
Had his flaws, but how could you argue with how he did over the first 5 years of his time here?
Right.
And how could you fire him on a Saturday morning and not talk to anybody until Tuesday night in the middle of a losing streak and make him the scapegoat?
When you're in a free fall, people want to see something happen, right. And he was the path of least resistance.
And as I said at the time, the way they came out of the gate last year, was a very poor reflection of their coaching staff.
Yeah.
In terms of how sloppy the play was.
In every way.
And that was something, look, it's not as, and yep. we were talking about this. I mean, Cleveland, they defend well. I'm hoping Craig Albernaz has some elements to some ideas that could get this team playing better defense more consistently. They have the athletes to be better defenders than what they've been. So, but that's a perfect example. But to go back to Hyde, and while I certainly didn't blame him, and I don't know if I'd even have him in the top three or top four of their problems last year, he wasn't providing solutions. Clearly, there was no longer a response for whatever reason, whether it was him, whether it was the players. Maybe Albernaz being this underdog kind of guy is going to come in and be like, I don't care if you guys are top 100 players. Like, it's go time. Like, you saw what we did in Cleveland. Like, we won games with, okay, Jose Ramirez is a future Hall of Famer, but, like, you don't recognize half those names. So I'm hoping there's some of that at work here. But I love that he comes from Tampa Bay and Cleveland, two classic overachieving franchises that have found success
consistently
without spending money. Now, I'm hoping this ownership group will find a happy medium there that, okay, it's not going to be the Dodgers payroll or the Yankees, but it can certainly be more than it's been. And if you can marry that with tweaking some things, improving some things in terms of your process, I'm hoping you're on your way to being better then.
So let's talk about process for a second, because of all the things that we can identify across the seasons, and this is an analytics philosophy, the idea that batting average doesn't matter anymore as much as on-base percentage and OPS. I believe that that's ridiculous. I believe that the game is fundamentally about guys that can hit. Yes, you want a complete player who can get on base and work a count and have a good at-bat, but I believe that the Orioles have spent too much time building a team around the idea of OPS with guys who...
Chasing slug. I mean,
And I think you can identify that even in the seasons where they were winning in the last 4 years, that was an issue. And I think that we are seeing the game slowly come to the realization that, oh, guys actually do need to be able to hit. The Blue Jays...
Well, if our team's going to strike out 12 to 16 times a game, that's just, in a general sense, across the board, you're not going to get a lot done because you're not going to hit that many home runs.
I believe that there are got players on the Orioles right now who are capable of being good hitters. I'm not talking about everybody hitting 300, but getting to a place where batting average is a larger factor, but that's going to require
having
change.
Better at bats in a general sense.
Better
right?
bats, change in philosophy, a change in philosophy and approach is something that I think this organization dearly needs to shift to, and I'm hoping that in the self-evaluation of the last 10 months, that has been something that they've come to realize and need to putting together a coaching staff, when teaching in the minor leagues, that this is something that they will incorporate, because that is something that dearly needs to change. I know Colton Cowser has a section. And he can do to raw. I mean, people love to moo and all this. Colton Cowser can't hit. He can't hit.
I brought that up in a spring.
Which is the contrast of what he was supposed to be coming out of college. And I get it.
No
it's a college,
question.
But his profile changed a lot.
Adley Rutschman was a player who, at his best, wasn't necessarily a power hitter. He could hit home runs, but was hitting the ball to the opposite field, getting on base.
Feels like all the enthusiasm's gone out of his game. And I don't talk about that much with baseball players as far as like getting out of bed, having confidence, showing up. Feels like we got a different dude here 2 years later. And I don't know whether Brandon Hyde or Tony Mancelino or Mike Elias, but Luke, by the way, Luke Jones is here, Alan is here, we're at State Fair. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends at GBMC. I do have Scratch also in the Maryland Lottery. We'll be at Coco's next Wednesday. Craig Albernaz will have his press conference by then. I will also be at Pizza John's next Friday in Essex. Luke, I did want to ask you this from... I don't have a press pass anymore. I know you guys don't know that, but I don't get to talk to these guys, but whenever I've talked to modern coaches or modern baseball people, even minor league managers, people that I know well and intimately, they all tell me how much this has changed. What is his job? What's, you know, like, as the modern... I always see the manager in that Johnny Oates, Davey Johnson kind of way, yeah. And I remember the way it used to be. I know they've been, to some degree, minimized, deballed. You've called it middle management.
It's middle management. I mean,
middle
it is.
Management, but middle management, that wouldn't be John Harbaugh's situation on the football side, but I do know this about John Harbaugh. Everything in his fiefdom, outside of Chad Steele, who runs the company, are his employees. That means the training staff. That means the knucklehead from Pennsylvania that got him all COVID. That means the mayor, who's the kicking mayor of New Jersey, who, you know, Randy Brandt. Like, all of those guys, they all work under John.
Right.
Yet John works under Eric, but not really, because in football, John's really holding – is Eric's daddy. Eric would lose the job before John in football. And once Eric loses the job, he never gets a job again, because that's football. Once you lose a – I mean, so it's a weird industry.
Hmm.
The baseball things change so dramatically because of analytics, which makes Buck Showalter like Trump hiring a liberal because he doesn't speak analytics. Like, literally a different side of a political fence to say we can't have Joe Madden because he and Mike Elias would be oil and water, even though they're both good baseball men.
Madden has a huge personality.
Then you don't want that.
They're right.
Okay, fair enough. Then you don't want to sell tickets here. So, and you don't want a face for your
telling you why they wouldn't have called him, because he's got a huge personality.
Although I would also say I'm not sure how many managers sell tickets.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But I'm not selling the confidence
of
what we would have here.
Messaging.
Here's where I am. I am ignorant to all of this. It's probably the 105.7 host star as well. As to what is really, if I'm sitting with the new manager for 3 hours and saying, what is your job? What do you have to do right now? Build a staff, get instructors, evaluate players. I'm going from the top.
Yeah.
But I still have a weird time with, we're going to pimp him as the manager. And, oh, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Dude doesn't even make out the lineup card. Dude doesn't even decide who's coming into the game or going out. All of that is as predetermined as me sitting at a Vegas blackjack table and just playing the book. Literally just playing the book, right?
Right.
Like, I know there's not a book, but I know the job has changed since Brandon Hyde was hired, and certainly since Buck Showalter was hired. That job has changed dramatically. I want you to set what that job is.
Yeah, easier said than done.
Well, you're hired. What are the first things you do today? Literally.
Well, I think, you know, you're evaluating players. I mean, a big part of this is you're managing people,
yes.
Right? I mean, as much as you talk about your analytics department, as much as you talk about sabermetrics, computers, everything that is driven by data, you still have the human element here. And
we're talking about Rutschman and
sure,
for all the things physically that he hasn't done. We don't know what the mental side is, and
right,
a manager has to.
So a manager and the coaching staff, worth its salt, is working in step with an analytics department. You're trying to filter what's noise or not going to be helpful for players. And this is also which players can process the most information. You
mm-hmm.
have some guys that, and you guys can attest to this, this applied 30 years ago. Earl Weaver was an analytics guy. It just wasn't called that,
mm-hmm.
right? But you have some players and who can process a whole lot of information. They love data. They love numbers. They love knowing what the probability is that a pitcher is going to throw this pitch in a 3-2 count with men on base.
And I would think some of the hitters understand some launch angle and some don't care.
And some guys are
right?
C-ball, hit ball. And that's changed. Like, I don't think that's kind of an extreme way of putting it.
But you've
some
got
guys want, okay, what's the most important thing that I need to know that's going to truly help me? And the rest of it, I can't be thinking about that.
You've got to know that there are guys playing the game that are hearing all this stuff, and by the time they get to the bat, they're so confused about what they're supposed to do.
So I think the coaches, the manager, and by extension the coaches, they're doing a lot of that work. They're managing people. They're trying. They should know their players better than anyone in a way that you might have tracking data that, yeah, we can measure someone's sprint speed. We can measure their release point and say, okay, something's off here. Are they tired? Is there a potential injury? So there are tools that help to inform you there, but it's still, you watch these guys every single day. You should know how they move better than anyone. I can tell you just from I'm a nobody. I can tell you from having watched Ravens players over the years and seeing them practice and being at training camp day after day after day, I can tell you a lot of times, he's limping a little bit, or he seems a little out of sorts. And that's just on a very simplistic level. A manager should be able to do that kind of stuff, right? And so I think, you know, to answer your question, how much leeway is Albert Nanez going to have to hire a coaching staff? Is it going to be a collaborative approach? I mean,
I would think if you turned down Miami and Chicago because they stunk last year and you're taking this gig, you're coming with some, you know, this is the way I'm going to do it. And I don't know where his job lets off and where the manager's job lets on. And I don't know what the managers do anymore. They've been so deballed in the way we talk about them. I mean, as middle management, they don't make decisions. Yeah. So I can't gauge, A, the importance, although I know it's important.
Yeah.
B, because I'm watching the World Series right now. But B, where that thing that we want him to get out of Rutschman, get out of Kobe Mayo, put into Westberg, instill into Holiday.
I don't think they need to put anything to Westberg. They just need to keep him in a coffin with some oxygen so he stays healthy most of the time.
That was one of my big things. Like, what are you doing from a strength and conditioning standpoint this offseason?
Is that the manager or is that Mike Elias?
Oh, that
I don't know.
The manager plays a part in that, but that's you have strength coaches, you have conditioning programs, you have a weight room.
I'd like to know what the manager plays a part in if he's not going to pick any of the groceries, because he's not. He's not picking the free agents.
Yeah, I mean, we're
Elias
not,
is going to sign
in 1975. Earl Weaver would tell Hank Peters who he wants on his bench. No, we're so far beyond.
So I guess my real understanding is if I really were having a beer with Greg Albernaz
within the game,
you took the job on Sunday. What are the first 10 things you need to do? Pitching coach, hitting coach, minor leagues, you know, who's my manager here? Who are the instructors there? What relief pitchers am I going to have? Understanding all these guys they just traded for this summer, some of that's going to be trade bait. And I think the real story moving off the managers onto Elias, because he's front and center now. The manager ain't doing anything. We'll see the manager Valentine's Day down in Florida, right? This is now upper management, and it's about the pocket of Arrighetti and Rubenstein and whatever philosophical recruiting and needs that Elias feels like they have. Bullpen, outfield, young players they feel like they want to deal. Maybe they want to deal Westberg. Maybe they want to deal Rutschman. I mean,
let me say,
I would hope that you are sending me text, Luke. WNST text brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy that shocked the hell out of me. That I look down and see trades and be like, whoa. Now, I feel like I need that, and I'm not buying a Birdland membership, right? But I don't know what the fan base here is that are we coming back 90 days from now and saying, Mayo, you're going to get 400 at-bats. Holiday, you're second base. Gunner, you're shortstop. Westberg, you're third. We're giving away all the jobs, right? I mean, to me, if I'm Albernaz taking this gig, Albernaz, I don't know how many jobs I even have on the roster because we have so many prospects and potential that I don't know where Tyler O'Neill's going to get at bats.
Before we completely move off the manager and what he's going to
do.
Sure,
I'm sorry.
I hope the at least in the top three things he does is that he calls or goes to visit his players and he gets to know them.
Sure.
In as intimate a way as it can be allowed by law so that he knows, you know, emotionally, mentally, who they are.
Who their wives are, right.
So that when they get to spring training, he's got sort of a roadmap for what happens on the field. I hope that he's doing that. And beyond that, yeah, there's no question. Elias has a ton of work to do. He has to completely rebuild the bullpen. He has to figure out his starting rotation. You're right. I guess one of the blessings and the curse of this team for the last 3 years is that, look, to me, even before we got to 25, the biggest indictment I had of Elias is that I feel like he made mistakes in terms of the transition from his veteran, particularly outfield, to bringing in the young guys. I'm not telling you it was going to be easy, but it didn't work.
We had all these great players. We had Mullins. We had all these guys. And now we look up and it's like, we don't have any outfielders. Who are you counting on next year that's going to hit 265 and hit 20 home runs? I'm just talking about a Nick Markakis year.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm getting out of any of these guys.
I think I was impressed by Dylan Beavers. I'll say that.
So was I.
I'll say that. If I'm the Orioles, I hope someone said to Jeremiah Jackson, I would like you to take ground balls at first base in the offseason.
It's interesting.
To see what he looks like. Because I liked the at-bats that he took. He started to hit a couple home runs, and after that he dropped off. And also, he'd been around the league, and I'm sure they developed a book on him. But I really liked the at-bats he took and his approach at the plate for a good portion of the second half. That can be deceptive sometimes. Not a big sample size. I get it.
A lot of Orioles fans never saw him play. Because he turned it off before he even got here.
Sure.
Like, literally.
Well, they missed him.
Same thing with Trevor Rogers. I mean, he was out pitching. And
he was a lot of fun.
You know, stadium's empty, yeah. And people were out to lunch, and football had started, and whatever. They did have some bright spots in August and September, is all I'm saying. Yeah.
The approach is a huge part of what I liked about both of the players I just mentioned. Results were varied at different times, but I liked their approach at the plate. I know what I think they should do. At least from an offensive standpoint, I doubt if they'll do it. But I have an idea in my head what I think they should do. But I think there are a couple of things. I mean, I think they're going to give the at-bats to Kobe Mayo. I think Ryan Mountcastle is likely gone. If it were me, I would include Colton Cowser in a package. I actually don't doubt that he could figure it out. I think he needs to be somewhere else to figure it out.
Well, he is somewhere else to figure it out. They got a new manager, and they're
sure.
going to have.
Well, and that's well,
that,
and that's part
that
of this.
Is part of this.
I mean,
yeah.
A big part of this.
Elias has been wedded to his players in a way that is maybe unhealthy.
I don't know. I don't agree with that because they made deal. He didn't have any problem going to get Corbin Burns.
But Stowers.
Was never a chosen one.
Never had a runway.
They didn't believe him.
And that's,
but they've given
and that's
all
with
these
me
guys
even thinking
a chance.
He was a fourth outfielder at the
Hold
time.
Hold on, man. They've given Kerstad a chance. They've given Mayo two chances. Cowser's is on his chance. I mean, all of these guys have had at-bats and had 100 at-bats to come up and play out of need or out of necessity or out of want. Some of them got blocked a little bit early on. Cowser being one of them.
Yeah.
But Mullins and those guys. So all the blocking's out of the way now. That's why I'm saying about the edge of the roster in saying, are there going to be no surprise moves? You're dealing Cowser, or I'm dealing Cowser.
So here's what I think they need to do.
They have to deal somebody to get something. Otherwise, they're going to play these guys.
The Orioles need, in my estimation, they need guys who can lead and who can hit, period. I think they need a young veteran, right-handed hitting center fielder, who has some leadership qualities. I have looked everywhere I can find, and I don't think that guy exists out here. So, here's what I think they should do. I think they should sign Bo. I think they should go hard after Bo Bichette.
Really?
I do.
Ooh.
I was not expecting that name.
I think that they should put him at second base, and do one of two things: either move Jackson Holliday to the outfield. Which means he would need to start learning that now, or trade him for something they need. Tarik Skubal's name has been out there. I'm not sure.
Why do you want to get rid of Holliday? You don't like him as a second baseman?
I like Jackson Holliday fine, but they have to find a way to get pieces. The deal they should have made last year was Garrett Crochet, and he's gone.
Right.
And I don't think there's a Garrett Crochet out there, which means they're probably going to end up signing. It wouldn't surprise me if Dylan Cease ends up here because he had a down year, and he throws innings, and that's useful, although he's not what his pedigree said he was going to be 3 years ago. I think re-signing Zach Eflin makes a lot of sense because he had physical issues, but everywhere else he's been solid. Is he a top of the rotation
guy? I'd like
guy?
Him for the – and
they can't sell me on that.
No, no, no.
They
no.
can't sell
no,
me
no,
on
– hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. I have viewed it through the lens of their rotation right now because I feel very good about Trevor Rogers.
Right.
I feel very good about what I saw from Kyle Bradish.
Right.
They need another guy to go with him, preferably above those guys. But if they can get another guy to slot in, and you tell me those are your top three, Zach Eflin would be the guy that I'm acquiring for the back end of my
rotation. He's your Gibson at the end.
Yeah. And let's be clear about this.
He's got to be healthy.
Dean Kramer's going to be on the list for the rotation and should be, but – The forearm thing that happened to him at the end of the year that he came back from scares the living daylights out of me, and it would not shock me if three starts into the season he's lost for a year and a half. So I think that they need to be on the forefront of that kind of thing. And as we know, pitching injuries just happen.
I mean, that's the thing. Nothing would surprise me with pitcher health at this
point. So then how do you invest
in it? They need to overload with arms, some veteran, and, you know, obviously there's some, God, I hope Grayson Rodriguez can actually throw 120 innings.
Well, the Corbin Burns thing is the cautionary tale of all cautionary tales. Because they, you know, I don't want to say he was signable last year because I don't think he wanted to play here for whatever reason, family, Arizona, whatever. But if he had been amenable, they would have signed him. They would have, the new owner would have been okay with that. I think Elias eschews that, right? Like, Elias fundamentally, even given a blank check with Mr. Moneybags, would still tend to, me being a Dundalk guy, would operate on the discount platform more than shopping top shelf, right?
Well, let's be honest. They have a ton of people they need to sign, particularly out of the bullpen, and they need to sign pitching. So, I mean, they need to spread their money out.
Yeah.
And Zach Eflin is affordable. And I think he's a guy that has a better upside than what we saw in 2025.
You also know what you're
getting. I'm just trying to be practical and realistic about how they're going to spend
their money. And I'm guessing
he's probably
a guy you could get on a one-year deal. I mean, given how this past year went
for
him.
Well, that's who they've been. The one-year deal thing is the way that they want to do business, right? They would sign three guys like him to one-year deals, right?
They're going to need to sign some people to multi-year deals. That doesn't mean the one-year deal is going to go out of vogue for them, nor should it, quite frankly. They've had some one-year deals that have worked very well, others that haven't worked well. And a lot of people would tell you in any sport, there's really no such thing as a bad one-year deal.
Well, the Japanese kid, he's 35 years old. He did okay.
In a vacuum, if they hadn't had all their other issues with the pitching, if Sagano had been the number five starter, I would have called that fine.
Right.
It wasn't – he didn't wow me, but he wasn't terrible.
It was a $15 million number five starter.
He had a run from May to the All-Star break where he was pitching to an ERA under four. The beginning of his career in Baltimore and the last 6 weeks in Baltimore, not so good.
Right.
But he had a significant chunk of maybe short of half the season where – he was okay.
Sort of what you expected.
Yeah. But, yes, he gave up too many home runs, and he was behind the eight ball a lot. Would I bring him back? Probably not. But it's I wouldn't call that one-year signing a failure. But
it was a bit of a cop-out.
That is an acceptable description of what
happened. Well, I mean, if you're looking for not having cop-outs this offseason, that's why I'm throwing all of this manure up against the wall. Because, I keep thinking – to not have a cop out, you better start dealing some of these prospects and deciding which ones you want. Instead of half playing all of them.
So then let me tell you why I believe Bo Bichette's the right guy for the Orioles. Because first of all, he's as quality a hitter as you're going to find on the market. He's a young veteran. He has experience in playing in the American League East.
Can you pay him more than Toronto is willing to pay him, or is Toronto not willing?
Toronto has a big payroll, and
they're spent out.
The Guerrero was a huge contract, and I don't know that they can pay him what he's worth.
Well, this is the real story for where this franchise is some outsider might come in and get Gunnar Henderson's money before he gets it here because he's not willing to get it. And to a man, all three of us would look and say, well, I don't know. You feeling good about $400 million for him right now? I don't know.
The other piece is that I don't necessarily want to deal Jackson Holliday. That's not what I'm doing. But you need to free up some guys so that you can move them to get other pieces that you need. Whether that's moving Holliday to the outfield, as I suggested, which I don't know whether it'll work or not, or moving him in a deal to get a big piece that you're going to need, and I'm thinking probably starting rotation, you need to give up something that somebody wants.
And just to use him as an example, and I'm going to give you another reason why. And I'm not even talking about Holliday, but just in a general sense. Holliday, I mean, you would get an absolute haul for him.
Yes.
I don't even know, because it's not something that was necessarily what I was thinking about. But, I mean, that would be an absolute haul. I mean, when there was talk about, Tarek Skubal two trade deadlines ago, I mean.
He was the guy who would have given up.
Yeah, I mean.
And let's be clear. I also would go after. I would go after Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker's not coming here.
Yeah.
So I see whether Cody Bellinger would be amenable or not.
It's funny because he's a guy that I brought up, and look, it's another lefty bat. I would like to have another right-handed bat in this lineup. This isn't a direct comp. What would Harrison Bader cost? I know he's had some injuries early in his career. He's played 140-plus games the last 2 years. He's probably not – I mean
– and his stats are up and down.
But
he had a good year this year.
He's a great defender.
Yes.
He hits left-handed pitching. I mean, the Phillies loved him. I mean, he tweaked his groin right at the start of the postseason, and it was a bummer for them.
And you
I like it better than Greg
Bader.
But
you mentioned Bellinger. The thing I like about Bellinger, I mean, he can play all three outfield spots.
Yep.
First base, I think I'm in agreement with you. I tend to think that they're going to give that to Mayo primarily with the idea that Basayo is going to be in the mix there as well. It's not going to be a full 162
Well, this would speak to where they are going to spend money or not. You know, you got to spend a big money on a second baseman, right? I mean, these are unorthodox.
They need an outfielder.
Let's talk about something other than we're going to come back with all of our players and buy one pitcher and two relief pitchers and some washed-up outfielder.
It's funny.
And I don't want a washed-up outfielder, which is why I think it makes sense to get a piece that really
shines.
They
signed a washed-up outfielder last year and turned it to be the best player.
And look, I throw
– I mean, literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm spitballing more than anything with talking about Harrison Bader because I'm thinking he would not cost a ton. Like, it's not going to be a six-year contract or anything
like that. And if you look out there for right-handed hitting quality outfielders who can play center field, they're just – it doesn't exist.
So whose at-bats go away if you sign him then?
Who are the at-bats going to right now?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, they have a need there. You can't pencil in Tyler O'Neill to be a 150.
Even though you owe him $60 million?
I mean, right? If they were trying out a team right now, okay, sure.
Well, that's one more reason to fire Elias then.
Beavers, Kowser, O'Neill, Jeremiah Jackson. Who am I forgetting for the outfield now?
You know, Jeremiah Jackson.
Kerstedt's not a thing.
I need to see more of him in the
– I mean, Kerstedt is a thing, but
– Yeah, Kerstedt we need
– Is he a good thing?
But the point is –
I don't know.
Okay, you have three guys right now that if you're not trading anyone, yes, Colton Cowser is going to be on the roster. He's going to play. Whether he should play every day, whether he should only play against right-handers, that's up for debate. Dylan Beavers, unless he has a miserable spring, there's no reason to think
You think he's 450 at-bats next year?
Sure. Okay. I mean, I thought that
And he's going to hit what and do what?
How am I supposed to know, Nestor?
Well, boy, the expectation if you're going to give him 450 at-bats.
I mean,
he's going to be a 260 hitter.
I want Dylan Beavers to get on base.
He's going
to
get on base.
If Dylan
Beavers
has an on base percentage of somewhere between 320 and 330, I think that's a good year. More realistically, probably around 310. But I want him. I said the same thing about Ali Rutschman, and I would say it to both of them. I want you to get on base.
Yeah.
I don't care how you get on base.
And
but find a way to get on base.
So to continue what I was saying, you add another outfield to that mix, then you're not completely forced to play Colton Cowser every day. Let him earn that. You're not forced to play Dylan Beavers every day. If Tyler O'Neill's kind of like Grayson Rodriguez at this point in time, right? If he's healthy, he's going to be in the lineup. Guy has power. He hit for power this year. He just only played 50 games, right? But go look at how many home runs he hit. Like, you can see what they liked in a vacuum about it. But so you absolutely need another regular outfielder. Every day implies 162 games. To me, the idea would be
who's a quality defender.
You add a fourth guy into that mix, and Jeremiah Jackson can be in there too. But to me, Jeremiah Jackson, I kind of in my perfect world for him, he becomes a new Ramon Urias.
Right.
You know, probably more outfield. You know, but I'm hoping he can play. He's not going to play short, but I'm hoping he can play some third base, maybe play a little bit of second
Start
base.
2 days a week, get a couple hits.
And you're going to need that, you know, especially if Jordan Westberg can't stay healthy for 150 games, which he hasn't the last 2 years. But I want to go back to something you mentioned.
And then we'll wrap up because you got to get the practice.
No, it's fine. Because he mentioned about a trade. There's also another element to trading. Yes, they have traded Joey Ortiz. They traded D.L. Hall. They got Corbin Burns there. Yes, they traded Kyle Stowers and Connor Norby. But we know who the young core is, like the guys that have played the most. You know, Kerstad was on his way to being part of that this year and then all of his issues, so I'm putting him to the side. To me, there's also a psychological element to me of shaking this thing up a little bit.
Yep.
And let's be clear, I'm not trading Colton Cowser out of anger. I'm not trading any of these guys out of anger that I'm mad at them or I'm mad at our position if I'm the general manager. But to me, and I talked about this a lot with when we were talking about the new manager, I want these guys to get uncomfortable a little bit.
Yep.
I think they're there's been this long term. I mean, from the moment Adley Rutschman was drafted,
anointed.
Right? I mean, anointed, the face of the franchise. Go down the list of these guys. Their lineup, you know, I always think back to Baseball America, how they would always put in the lineup. They project what your lineup's going to be 4 years from now. And these guys have been on that list. We're on that list for such a long time. There's something to be said to me of rattling some cages a little bit here. And this is part of what I said about the manager. Like, whoever their manager was going to be, I wanted them to come in. And it doesn't mean that they have to be an a-hole. But to come in and be like, guys, you were a top 100 prospect. So what? Colton Cowser, did you see what you hit this past year? Did you see what your strikeout rate was? You're striking out like late career Chris Davis. Like, and obviously you're not going to say it in those quite harsh terms.
Right.
But you're no longer the fourth pick in the draft. You're an outfielder hitting 220 and striking out.
If these guys, are they too comfortable? Yeah, you know, there was some conjecture about that.
Well, there was nobody
chasing
any of these guys for a bat.
So this was the comment.
So the idea of shaking things up a little bit as well.
When we were talking about Elias, this was the thing that I was going to use. I mean, it's the ultimate sports metaphor. You're the top draft pick. Everybody loves you from high school to college to the draft. You've never been challenged, and then you get to the place that you're supposed to be, and you struggle. I've said to you for 25 years. I believe in apprenticeship because apprenticeship teaches you a lot, and sometimes failing is part of it. And I don't know if anybody knows this, but baseball is a game of failure. And
Big time.
I think a lot of these guys hit – I mean, 2 years ago when Holiday and Mayo and Kerstad were blowing up the minor leagues. I mean, just blowing guys away for the first 2 months of the season. And everybody's like,
and the baseball team's winning 700%.
Why, right? Why aren't these guys up here? They should be in the lineup right now.
Said the same thing about Basayo, though. And he struggled.
Jackson Holiday should have been in an opening day lineup. And these guys have come up and been like, do they know that they're playing baseball? Because sometimes I can't tell. And I think from Elias to the assistant GMs, to the players here at the major league level, all these people are in the middle of a wake-up call where this is harder than it looked. Mm-hmm. This is harder than it was when you were a non-professional player. And at this moment, you need to figure out how much you want this and what is the best approach for you to achieve what you want. And that's for everybody. And as you've been talking about, I'm glad that they brought someone from the outside who hopefully can tell some truth to power, and that the players, after experience, you know, Gunnar Henderson's like, I want to be in a place where I can win. Well, you need to do better.
Be part
and
of
you
that.
You need to tell all your guys they need to do better, and then maybe you'll win.
And I'll add to that, the same applies for everyone within the organization. Your analysts, your player development people, at every level where it's like, guys, we kind of had this thing going, and it felt like a well-oiled machine back in 2020. When I say 2021, 22, I'm talking about more so the farm system. But we clearly have hit some major bumps. You know, that's the nicest way to put it.
Got our manager
so
fired. Yeah.
We need to adjust. What you thought was what we need to do from a hitting standpoint, we need to adjust. It doesn't mean we necessarily need to throw it out 100%, but we need to adjust here. I mean, you talked about batting average. I just want to piggyback. How about getting the walk rate up?
Yeah.
I mean, for all this
talk. Yeah, these guys are supposed to get on base.
I mean, it's been chasing slug. I mean, Colton Cowser.
How about making other pitchers work a little bit philosophically?
You know, Colton Cowser's been the case study that you and I have used a lot. But go look, and I understand his first year. I mean, when he first got called up, it was, you know, he had, 60 plate appearances in 2023. Struggled mightily. However, just looking at the peripherals, his strikeout rate was 28%, which, not saying that's good. He had a 16.9% walk rate. Now, that was noisy, but the following year, strikeout rate, 30.7%. Walk rate fell to 9.3%. This year, 35.6% strikeout rate. Walk rate, 7.5%. So in this process of chasing slug and chasing slug and chasing slug, he's swinging and missing more, which, not a big shock, right? I'm not saying it's good, but you can at least see that. But it's also resulted in his walk rate cratering.
Well, whatever they did with Rutschman 2 years ago, too.
Sure.
Where, you know, either trying to hit home runs or not trying to hit home runs.
As much as that first half of 24 went well for him, I think that put him on the path to what ended up happening. I really do. And obviously now there's health concerns this past year. I mean, he's got to get in better shape. You know, you had two oblique injuries.
Yes.
You got to get in better shape. I'm not saying that means he's that, or you know, I'm not doing anything like that. But when you have soft tissue injuries, and that's why
there's a median.
To me, the
Rutschman's on one side, Tyler O'Neill's on the other,
yeah,
and they need to meet in the middle.
Sure.
Where Rutschman is in better shape, and Tyler O'Neill
is not
pumps. You know, 100 fewer.
Do a little more yoga.
Yeah.
You know, like
if come do it with me if you want Planet Fitness.
But you know, again, we're using these examples. These are things they need to tweak and change. And I hope pitching is obvious. I really hope there's a concerted effort to go add at least one very legitimate bat to this lineup. I think that would do worlds for these guys as well, where it's like, hey, they've invested and they brought in a grown-up.
An anchor.
You know, a grown-up.
They needed
more so than Tyler O'Neill, right? What Nelson Cruz did 11 years ago for
absolutely.
The Orioles. I'm not saying that guy specifically. You know, although Nelson Cruz, I feel like he could still hit probably today. But someone along those lines that could be added to the mix, I think outfield. But like he said, Bo Bichette, not that he's like this grizzled vet, but he's
they
an established
young
hitter.
Veteran.
So I... Pitching is obvious. I looked at a top 50 list. There are probably 30 pitchers on there that the Orioles are one of the eight teams listed as a potential suitor. No duh. Of course they need pitching. I really want to see them add a legit, at least one
legit
bat. Be
interesting to see if they actually get whoever their target is. And we'll never know that. But right now as they sit and say, here's the pitcher, here's the outfielder, here's where we're going to get it, here's who's expendable, and then how they get that map between here and, let's say, Super Bowl.
Yeah.
To make that happen. Luke Jones is Baltimore Luke. He will be in Owings Mills. We will be covering the Miami game on Thursday night. And Alan, of course, always on the beat with baseball with us. Good seeing you guys. Good
you
seeing
too.
You together. Yeah. Glad we made the effort. I know it was a little bit of a morning thing, especially after 8.5 hours of baseball on Monday night. There will be a World Series winner before the week is over. And when we gather next Wednesday at Coco's, we will have that. I have a Raven scratch-offs to give away. We're going to give them away to everybody here at State Fair in Catonsville. My thanks to Evan and Keith and everybody, Tammy and the whole crew for making it happen for us here. My thanks also to Cindy Atkinson for stopping by. We had Dr. Sunil Dasgupta join us here from UMBC talking some poli-sci. We did a whole political thing the first hour. Politics, community, baseball. I'm done for a while. I'm going to watch Thursday night football, sit around on Sunday as the weather changes and pray for Jamaica. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, the Maryland Crab Cake tour signing off from State Fair in Catonsville. Stay with us.